Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Disruptive Adventism once again. I just want to make sure that you understand this episode was created by Wes Vi. He did all the scripting, he did everything. It was supposed to be in his voice, but sadly, because of COVID-19 and other responsibilities he has as a pastor, he was not able to record, so you're stuck with me once again. But if you're a creator and you want one of our episodes, one of our content, and you want to put your voice out here on this podcast, you want to be a guest host on this podcast, make sure to reach out to us. We will give you the files. You can just script it and, you know, we can work something out and you will also get paid. So make sure that you reach out to us on our social media, on anything else, if you want to be part of this project. Thanks for listening again. And again, this was produced by Wes Vi. Check out his content, the Wes Vi podcast, and everything he's putting out right now. Let's go. If you have ever driven past MetLife Stadium in the Meadowlands, New Jersey, you certainly noticed that enormously ugly mess of a structure once referred to by the governor of New Jersey as the ugliest building in America. Situated across the parking lot from where the Giants and Jets play football each Sunday, that hideous building is the American Dream Mega Mall. I remember the first time I asked someone what that building was. They just laughed and said, "That's a good question." They're trying to figure that out. The idea for this massive mall began to form in the late 90s. And construction began in 2004. It was originally supposed to be an expansive shopping mall, but when the economic crisis hit a few years later, combined with the maturing of online shopping giant Amazon, the project hit uncertain times. After several owners and many iterations of what this project would eventually look like, it will open in 2020. It will be more entertainment center than shopping mall. The developers of the American Dream Mall got caught planning for a future which did not exist. They had all the right ideas for a 90s era shopping experience, but did not pay attention to the industry shift to online shopping as it unfolded in those early years of the new millennium. The church has done much of the same. Armed with mid-century tactics for evangelism and growth, the church has mostly resisted the changing technological revolution that has taken place in the world. Choosing to hold onto yesterday's methods and not embracing the internet revolution and falling behind in understanding how community and communication work in the 21st century. Today we will hear from Keith Bowman, founder of the Haystack.tv, about how the church is slowly beginning to move towards digital modernization in its communication and ministry and some of the challenges that we still face.
So I was teaching this Bible class with this really old Bible book, which actually turned out to be really good. I love the New Encounters training. Shout out to Nina Atchison, but the old one was good too, I thought. So anyway, I'm getting down to the end, that very last chapter of the book, and it's talking about technology and ministry. And it's talking about how Adventists were pioneers in the press in the 1800s, and HMS Richards was pioneer in radio in the, the 20s, you know, and then we were pioneers in satellite in 70s and 80s and stuff. And there was nothing in there, obviously, about the internet because they were printed before that became a big thing. But I started realizing, oh, wow, we missed the boat on the internet. We were pioneers and then we became like absent from the technological conversation. And the Mormons jumped on it. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen their website, all the stuff that they have and stuff. But anyway, we need to pick that up.
The struggle we face, though, it's a misunderstanding of how we as Christians should relate to and engage with the internet and technology. It is a challenge that not just Adventists have struggled to get it right. So we asked Keith why he thought it is such a challenge for the church to thrive in the internet era.
Well, I think that there's something that has happened inside of Christianity that basically made Christians separate from the world, which is kind of like what Christ says, you know, be in the world, but not of the world. But somehow it turned into Christians aren't real people. You know, so like they don't go through real issues. They don't have real stuff that happens to them. Like real life can't be sung about or portrayed on television or things like that. So for example, if you made an entertaining video, someone might look at it and think that it's funny, but then say, well, that's not really appropriate for Christian stuff. So, okay, why not? Are Christians not allowed to laugh? You know, like, so there's this this thing that's been created within the community that says that things that don't explicitly talk about God or aren't evangelistic are actually not defined as Christian. Rather than saying, hey, listen, we as Christians can take over the entire entertainment industry, the technology world, YouTube market, all of these things, and make really quality content that has themes and, you know, ideas that, you know, are deep inside of the content that we create that speak to people's souls and speak to their issues that they're going through right away, that may not necessarily just be the way we define it today as Christian.
Christians aren't real people? At first, that may seem like a pretty harsh statement. But as I thought about that statement, I began to realize that digital Christianity doesn't look a whole lot like the real people I'm friends with and interact with day in and day out. We love and hurt, laugh and cry, joke around, and support one another through hardships. And yes, we rely on God while we do that, but truth to be told, my faith lived out doesn't look very much like those Christian movies. My Bible studies don't sound like those YouTube videos. Could it be that digital Christianity has lost its humanity for the sake of being special? So the question is, why couldn't we make Christian content of digital consumption that sits squarely in the middle of real life? What's wrong with encouraging people or making them laugh?
Yeah, so like investing money in something that's funny and does absolutely nothing else for the individual except make them laugh, like how is that a positive thing? You know, like, because it's not going to get more members in the church. Yeah, so, you know, disinterested service. You know, Ellen White talks about that like all the time, disinterested service. You know, the Bible is kind of, it actually alludes to that quite a bit, disinterested service. Like Jesus, when he's like separating the sheep from the goats, is like, hey, you know, you guys were like, you know, you took care of me when I was poor and when I was hungry, when I was naked. You took care of me all of these situations. You visited me in prison and so on. And they look at him and they say, when did we do that, Lord? And that's foolishness, first of all, because they know when they did it, right? They did it all the time. But the point that Jesus is actually making is that it's so a part of who they are that they didn't do it for the purpose of being saved. They did it because they just enjoyed being that type of person. So like disinterested service to me is like this concept of becoming so Christ-like and becoming so full of the Spirit and just like enjoying life to enjoy life. So I'm going to make something that makes people laugh, which is great, period. There's no other motivation behind it. It's just, it's a really positive thing that uplifts the world. It uplifts me and it makes everybody happier.
Disinterested online service. Creating content and conversation in the digital space to make the lives of those we interact with just a little bit better. Everyone knows that sometimes just sharing a smile or acknowledging someone passing you on the sidewalk can make a difference in that person's day. But how do you share a smile online? Relationships work differently online. So what can we do to establish our online presence?
I've started a ministry called The Haystack. I've started a number of different techie projects. I started with a couple friends of mine, Sam Moreno and Jeff Tatarchuk. And when we started it, we were hoping that the church would embrace it, you know, trying to speak, have conversation and stuff within the Facebook and internet world, you know, with young adults and youth. And we went to conferences and churches and divisions and unions. We went everywhere. And everybody was really excited about what we were doing, but nobody would embrace it. And nobody would support us in any way. And so it's been a really, really long journey to get to the place where the church actually did embrace it and picked up The Haystack. And we've been able to try to support other ministries as well along the way in doing that. But the church is really slow to make those digital turns.
It's time for a break. After the break, we will hear more from Keith about how The Haystack got started and also the need for the church to modernize its online presence. Thank you for listening to Disruptive Adventism. We're back with more content. So, as social media has become ubiquitous, many churches and organizations joining the digital realms late have chosen not to prioritize their websites. choosing instead to rely on free social media networks as their primary digital residence. However, with new statistics showing a decline in Facebook and increasing divergence in social media use along generational lines, communicators are beginning to stress the importance of developing the channels you own and control over the borrowed space of social networks. One of the most important digital spaces is your website. A website is the first meaningful impression that your church or organization will make with a person who is interested in connecting with you offline. But most church websites are pretty terrible. How can we fix that?
Yeah, so there's this you never pander to the individuals, you always pander to the masses type thing. So you look at something like Adventist Connect and you say, okay, well, you know, it's kind of a cookie cutter model for the entire church, you know, but the church invested, you know, millions of dollars into this model. You know, and so it's like, okay, they tried to meet the needs of a bunch of churches across the North American division where they said, okay, let's just get something out there that will blanket cover the most amount of people, but, you know, it won't look terrible, but it also, it's not going to look great because how can you do that? How can you give the same website to, you know, that many people and have it look great? So, I mean, I think it looks okay. There's some parts of it that are better than other parts and whatever. But quite honestly, man, we are actually helping the people that could help us. We're helping them disappear from the church really fast. So the ones who could come along and understand the technology and start giving us unique websites for each one of our churches, we actually are really good at not involving them in the leadership and not creating warm, friendly environments for them and helping them walk right out the door at, you know, certain junctures of their life where they could make huge impacts in our church and on our web presence, our digital presence, and that we're scared to give them the freedom to go online and represent us, and because they're going to make mistakes and bad decisions, of course they will, type thing, you know. So I don't know, like, we really could change our web presence if we invested in young people and we had a place for them to come and do all the live streaming and provided for them the opportunities to work on our websites and do things like that. But not every church has that opportunity even. So that's kind of, you know, what Adventist Connect is for those country churches that have 10 people attending and they're all over the age of 50 and they don't really have a chance, you know? So, and there's a lot of those. There's a lot of those churches.
I know. Change can be difficult. It is a law of the physical world that an object at rest tends to stay at rest. In terms of the church world, this simply means that change is hard. As a church or organization becomes settled into their habits and routines, generating the momentum necessary to facilitate meaningful change is not easy. We asked Keith just how hard it was to get the haystack off the ground and cast the vision to the church and get them to buy in. Here is the story.
It's a great question. So me and my wife calculated that we spent probably somewhere over $8,000 to $10,000 on the haystack before the church ever even gave me a moment of like hope. So, you know, something to think about is like, and not only that, but it was like 4 years after we started it. 4 years. That's a really long time. I had a full-time job, like, and I was doing the haystack in between everything. And it was burning me out. Like, it was really tough, but I just kept doing it because I felt like God had called me. Like, I felt like God was saying, hey, listen, I have nothing in this area. Please continue to work here. So I just kept working and working and working. And other people too. Like, I had so many volunteers. We've probably had over 100 volunteers, people volunteering their time. And I've never said no to anyone. Like, anybody who's like, hey, I'd like to do this, or I'd like to offer this, or I'd like to, you know, be this. I've always said yes. I've always been like, yeah, do it. Do it and we'll put it up, you know, like, because I feel like in my own view of it, is that the haystack was meant to be a place where people could shine like the church could digitally shine, you know, and have a conversation together where everybody had a voice at the table. That's actually a line from Jeff Tatarczyk. He loves that line. And it's a great line. Like, that's the haystack, is that everybody gets to bring something to the table. So like, it takes a lot of hard, long work, time put in. And at one point, I even quit my job to do the haystack full time. Before then, it got picked up by the NAD. So, you know, I guess I would say to people too, like, you never know what God has for you. You know, I was considering letting it die because I was like, we're starting to lose membership. We're starting to lose, you know, kind of our influence. And, you know, maybe this is the life cycle of it. And maybe all this work was for that time and now it's over. And right about that time, like, the whole thing shifted. And so I would definitely encourage people, like, work hard, not for the hopes of gaining something, but work hard because you love Jesus. And, like, don't think that the moment you start something, you're going to have all of the success in the world, because 99.99% of the time, that just doesn't happen.
For the founders of the Haystack, the church bought in just in time. But after the break, we will hear how this is not the case for everyone else. But there is hope. Thank you for listening to Disruptive Adventism. We will be back after this short break. Welcome back to the final segment of Disruptive Adventism. Today, Be Creative with Keith Bowman. For Keith and the other founders of the Haystack, they found support for the ministry that God had placed on their hearts. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. Sometimes, despite the energy and effort that you may put behind an idea, it just won't gain traction. It could happen for a number of reasons. Maybe it was just not the right time. Perhaps before you can really get the idea off the ground, your circumstances need to change. Maybe you lose your champion.
I was just talking with a friend of mine on the phone last night, and he was telling me all his woes about not being able to find support, and it's true. It's crazy because he had a pastor in a church where the pastor was a visionary and he was like, let's do stuff. And so he's fully supportive on this big college campus, huge college, 50,000 plus students attending this college school. The church is very small. And he's like, okay, we're going to take over this college campus. And then the conference made some decisions that made pastoring very difficult for him. So he moved to Seattle, right? And so now they're left there and they're all on their own. And my friend who's down there trying to do ministry goes to the board, and the board's like, yeah, all the things that he was doing, we don't really want anymore. We never really wanted them in the first place. So these young people that have been starting to participate in the ministry and starting to come to church and all these things, literally the church said, we don't want them anymore. We don't want to change. We don't want young people coming to our church. We actually really like the way we've always been doing things. So the support that he had was this one pastor, and now no support exists. So it can be fleeting. Like, it can be really fleeting. So, like, where can you get support from?
Stories like this happen all too often in the church. Young visionary people try to strike out in a new direction to impact the community around them, only to find that the local church they are part of is not really interested in trying something new. In fact, they are very content to stay just the way they are. However, there is movement in the organization. There are entities that are beginning to empower the next generation of visionaries to rethink how we minister to our modern world.
There's some conferences doing some cool things. Like, for example, I know Oregon, you can submit a request for creative evangelistic funds, and they'll give a pretty good amount. There's a Shark Tank that's coming next year at the CALD convention, where they're going to give out over $100,000 in money towards creative projects. Another thing that we've done is we've sent requests for grants and foundations, and we actually got $30,000 from one foundation to boost the haystack, which it was very helpful. It was very helpful. So, I mean, there's some of that creativity that you can do, is go into grant writing and see if you can do something that somebody already has written, wants to give money for.
Because of the pioneering work of Keith at the Haystack, Justin Koo, also known as That Christian Vlogger, or now I Am Listening with Justin Koo, and Caleb Isley of Humans of Adventism, the wider church is beginning to understand and appreciate the impact that this online digital approach can have on our mandate to preach the gospel to the world. And the organization is beginning to change, especially after this crisis. But it can still be discouraging to carry a passion for creative ministry only to be marginalized or pushed aside. So why should we persevere in the face of such resistance?
You never know what the impact is going to be. And Jesus looks around and he sees all these sheep wandering around without a shepherd. And he says, you know, pray to the Lord of the harvest that we have more laborers in the field. And so he's looking around, he's saying, look, we need more laborers, you know, and some people are casting stuff and they're catching one or two. Some people are casting stuff and they're catching hundreds, but you just keep casting. Like that's the point, is like, you just keep laboring in the vineyard for Christ, whatever he calls you to do, you just keep doing it because you enjoy laboring for Christ and bringing glory to God. And then you let the chips fall where they may. So the motivation is not necessarily, and this is tricky because I think a lot of young people, having grown up with technology, like the phone in their hands, you know, they're always looking for the number of followers. I want to be an influencer, you know, like I want to be an influencer. That's my goal one day. I got to be an influencer. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of the wrong goal. The right goal is, I just want to be in love. I want to be in love. I want to be loved. Like I want to be loved for Christ. I want to connect with God so much that my life shines love out. And Christ will take care of the influence. Whatever your influence that you're given at that point is given to you by God, and you just appreciate whatever it is. It's a little bit of a tough mentality, but I think that it's also freeing because it gives you contentment wherever God puts you.
The world is becoming more digital every day. After this crisis, the potential impact for the kingdom in this new world is immense, but the laborers are few. God has a need for his people to stake out his claim in the online domain. As we wrap up, we ask Keith for a final word concerning creative digital ministry. Here's Keith's final word.
Final word. Be creative because you love being creative. That's it. Be creative because you love being creative.
You've been listening to Disruptive Adventism. We hope that today's topic helped you to think and change something about your practices, about your faith, about your Adventism. If you want to subscribe, make sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast. We'll be there. And make sure to give us a review if you like what you're listening to. If you want to support, make sure to go to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. It helps us pay our bills and produce the content that you're listening to. And if you want to socialize, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, or on Twitter, and hit us up whenever you need anything. We'll be there to support you. Thank you for listening today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.